Okay, well, you know what I'm going to say. Let's just go ahead and do it, and y'all can do it too. It goes like this. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is, in fact, not quite at the beginning of the chapter. It is at the book of Numbers, chapter 25, and verse 10. So Numbers 25, verse 10, and we're in the middle, if you recall, of a cliffhanger where we had a bunch of folks last week that died by the plague as a result of having joined themselves via essentially some whoring women from it turns out multiple places, but essentially the Midianites were among them, and some of the they were probably some of the worst offenders, and then the Moabites as well that were and the Amorites. Anyway, Moab was where the king of Balak was from as well. And so we had Moabites and Midianites, but primarily Midianites that were causing the problems. And it was, if you recall, a Midianitish woman that was taken into the tent by one of the sons of Israel. A fellow named Pinhas went in and had enough, and basically because they did this in the sight of all the congregation and Moses as well, and they were essentially whoring for these fake gods, and Pinhas ran them both through, stayed the plague, even after 24,000 had died. And then it says this, so verse 10, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and here's what he said, the words in red, Pinhas, or in the Old English, Phinehas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, so he's Aaron's grandson, has turned my wrath away from the B'nai Israel, in that he was very zealous for my sake among them, so that I did not consume the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, in my jealousy. So therefore I say, behold, I am giving him, this would be like the Congressional Medal of Honor, only a lot more so, I am giving him my covenant of shalom, of peace, and it shall be unto him and to his seed after him. This is an everlasting priesthood, a Kohenimship, because he was zealous for, and by the way, that word there is kana, for his el. And he made atonement for the B'nai Israel. How did he make atonement? He ran them both through. Who did he run through? Well, we're going to hear in the next verse. Now, the name of the man of Israel that was slain, who was slain with the Midianitish woman, was Zimri, son of Salu, a prince of his father's house, among the Shimeonites. The name of the Midianitish woman that was slain was Cozbi. She was daughter of Zur. He was the head of the father of his father's house in Midian. So highfalutin folks, both of them, and both deader than a doornail. And the Yahuwah then spoke to Moshe, and he said, vex, or harass, go after them, folk, those Midianites, and smite them. So this is pretty severe. Yah is peeved, to put it real mildly, and he is going to say, go after the Midianites and smite them, because they have harassed you by their wiles. Wherewith they have beguiled you in the matter of Peor. In other words, they caused these folk to go after the pagan gods that literally would curse them. And as we talked about a little bit in the Torah portion last week, it looks like this was kind of the Clintonian deal with the devil of his day. Bilaam, although he was not allowed to curse the people directly, said, you know, I know how we can get them to curse themselves. We'll just send all them good-looking women over there, and you know how it is that they affect me. I can have me do anything they want. Well, that'll work with these people too, and it did. They were beguiled in the matter of Peor, in the matter of Cozbi, the daughter of Prince of Midian, their sister, who was slain on the day of the plague in the matter of Peor. So they've now suffered the reward of what they wrought, but it's not over yet. Then it came to pass, says chapter 26, after the plague, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and to Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, and he said, take the sum, lift up the head again, count all of the congregation of the B'nai Israel from 20 years old and up by their father's houses, all that are able to go to war in Israel. So Moshe, Eleazar the priest, spoke with them in the plains of Moab by the Jordan there at the Jericho River, and he said, take the sum of the people from 20 years old and up, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe and the B'nai Israel that came forth out of the land of Egypt. Now remember, this is the book which has been named Numbers, that before, when they first did this census, right up front, the number And this is one of those numbers that after a while you just kind of remember it because it's, well, it's an interesting number. 603,550. That's how many military fighting age males had come in at that time. Now, come to think of it, that's only a month or so worth, you know, in the modern invasion of terrorists coming in here. But that was the number of fighting age people that came out of Egypt in the beginning of the book of Numbers. Now we're going to get another count, see where we are today. So, Reuben, firstborn of Israel, and we're going to, what I'm going to do, because we're running way late tonight, is I'm going to just abbreviate this. I encourage folks to go through and read it, because what we're going to see is the names and the lineage of each of these, of their houses. The names are recorded, they're obviously important, and the number is in here as well. So we got Reuben, firstborn of Israel. Sons of Reuben are listed. These then are the families of the Reubenites, and of all of those, by their houses that were numbered, 43,730. Sons of Palu, Eliab, sons of Eliab, Nemuel, Dathan, and Abiram, and so forth. These, by the way, it says of the same Dathan and Abiram, the elect of the congregation who strove against Moshe and against Aaron in the company of Korah. So they were part of Korah's rebellion when they strove against Yahuwah. And remember, the earth opened up her mouth, swallowed them up all together with Korah. That company died. When the fowler had finished devouring the 250 men, and they now became a sign. Remember their censers. They, notwithstanding, the sons of Korah, not all of them, in other words, died. So there were some of the sons of Korah that, as it says, died not. We're going to see, as a matter of fact, when we get to the Psalms, there were some of the Psalms that were written by the sons of Korah. Now, the sons of Simeon, after their families, and again, they're named the families of the Yaminites, the Yachanites, the Nemuelites, the Zerahites, and the Shaulites. And then, of those families of the Simeonites that were numbered in total, 22,200. And that's interesting because it was 59,300. So one of the things that we do as we go through here is kind of compare the numbers, and it looks like Simeon has taken it on the chin. Sons of Gad, after their families, their numbers are listed by family, and when they're all added up, the sons of Gad, according to those that were numbered, 40,500. On into Judah. Remember, Ur and Onan died in the land of Canaan, and then we have the sons of Judah after their families, Shelah, the family of Perez, Zerah, we remember these names, and the sons of Perez, Hezron, the Hezronites, Hamul. When they're all added up, the families of Judah, according to those that were numbered of them, were 76,500. So still, I think that's the biggest of the tribes. Sons of Issachar, after their families, when they're all counted up, the number of the tribe of Issachar was 64,300. On to Zebulun and their families, Sered, the Elonites, the Yahielites. These are the families of the Zebulites. When you add all of those up by their families, that number, 60,500. Sons of Joseph, after their families. Now remember, Joseph is divided into two. He had two sons, and sometimes they're counted separately. And indeed, in this case, we're going to see the numbers for both of them. Of Manasseh, they named the various sons of Manasseh, and even the grandsons in this case, the sons of Gilead, and down through the Helek and the Helekites and so forth, the Shechemites, the family of the Shemidites, and Hefer. Zelophehad, is also among this crowd. Remember, we're gonna hear more about this family as well, and this woman. Zelophehad, the son of Hefer, had no sons. He only had daughters. So we end up with the daughters now of Zelophehad. And their names, Mahlah, Noah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. They're going to be named more than once in this portion. These then are the total of the families of Manasseh. They that were numbered to them were 52,700. Okay, and remember there's another family, the sons of Ephraim. They had their folks as well. And when you count those families up, the families of Ephraim, according to those that were numbered, 32,500. So you have the total of these two houses constitute the sons of Joseph after their families. Then we have the Benjamites after their families, Bela, and Ashbel, and Ahiram, and Sephufram, and Hupham. And when you put the sons of Bela and the grandsons in there, which were Ard and Naaman, and then you get the sons of Benjamin and their families, add them all up. Answer number is 45,600. These are the sons of Dan, it continues, after their families, Shuham. And that means the family of Shuhamites, and that's the only one that are listed. When you add up the families of all of the families of Dan, which basically is the Shuhamites, according to those numbered, the answer was 64,400. So it's kind of interesting. In this case, the sons of Dan, rather than being called Danites, because it was just one son, are called Shuhamites. Sons of Asher, after their families. And then we have Imnar, Ishvi, Beriah. And he had some grandsons, Heber and Malkiel. And the name of one daughter, which is also named here, is Sarah. It's C-R-A-H in the English in this case. So not quite the same as Sarai became Sarah. When you add up all the families of the sons of Asher, those that were numbered, well, they lifted up the head, 53,400. On to Naphtali, and their family, the those of Jezreel, of Guni, of Jezer, and the Shilamites. When all the families of Naphtali are accumulated in total, they numbered 45,400. So now we get to the place where it says, those that were numbered of the B'nai Israel. And so we're going to add them all up. Remember, the total was 603,550. Some tribes got slightly bigger. Some of them got notably smaller. But now the total, not quite what it was before, but not as dramatically declined as some of the tribes had. Number is 601,730. So now it says, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, unto thee shall the land be divided for inheritance according to the number of the names. So this is the census, the head count, upon which the families of the various tribes will be delivered the land. So the bigger tribes get more land in their allocation, and the smaller ones lesser. And essentially that is how it's going to be done. To the more you shall give more inheritance, to the fewer you'll give less inheritance. Each one according to those that were numbered of it shall its inheritance be given. So Judah will get the biggest inheritance, and then down, obviously. Notwithstanding, the land shall be divided by lot. According to the names of the tribes of their fathers, they shall inherit. So it's going to be done essentially, well, not so much randomly. Remember, by lot means Yah is going to pick. According to the lot shall their inheritance be divided between the more and the fewer. These are they that were numbered then of the Levites after their family. Now, we know the names of the Levites. We have the family of Gershon, the Gershonites, Kohath, and Merari. These, then, it says, are the family of Levites, the family of the Libnites, the family of the Levites per se, right? So Levi, one of those. The Hebronites, the Malites, the Mushites, and then the Kohath, the Korahites. Korah begot Amram. The name of Amram's wife was Jochebed, daughter of Levi. She was born to Levi in Egypt. That name begins to sound familiar, right? Of course. She bore unto Amram, fellow that we know, actually several fellows and a woman we know, Aaron and Moshe and Miriam, their sister. Unto Aram were born four sons. We know the names of the first two who perished tragically, Nadab and Abihu, then Eleazar and Ithamar. And as it says, Nadab and Abihu died when they offered strange fire before Yahuwah. They that were numbered of them were 23,000, every male from a month old and upward. So these aren't the going to war age, these are a month old and upward. They were not numbered among the children of Israel otherwise, because there was no inheritance given them among the B'nai Yisrael. These are they, that were numbered by Moshe and Eleazar, the Kohen, who numbered the children of Israel there in the plains of Moab by the river Jordan at Jericho. But among these, and this is important because it was exactly what Yah said was going to happen, among these was not a single one, not one man. And it just says, well, of course, that's the same thing. Those that were numbered, so the men were numbered, by Moshe and Aaron the priest, who numbered the children of Israel in the wilderness at Sinai. So all of those who were told, your carcasses were fallen in the wilderness, they're gone at this point. For Yahuwah has said of them, surely you shall die, surely they shall die in the wilderness. And there was not one man left among them, except for the two, whose names, of course, we know, save Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun. then, it says, drew near. Those women we talked about here while we were going through the head count, they were about the only women that were named. The daughters of Zelophehad, son of Hefer, son of Gilead, son of Machir, the son of Manasseh. Say, so he is, they are of the family of Manasseh, son of Joseph. And here are the names of those daughters, Mala, Noah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. They stood before Moshe and Eleazar the priest, before all the princes and all the congregation at the door there of the tent of meeting. And they spoke up, and they said, our father died in the wilderness. He was not among the company that numbered themselves, gathered themselves together against Yahuwah in the company of Korah. In other words, he wasn't part of that rebellion, but he died in his own sin, and he had no sons. So he's only got the daughters. Why should the name of our father be done away with from among his family because he had no son? Give us a possession among the brethren of our father. So they are asking for a special case because essentially their line dies out. Otherwise, they have no male heir on the line. So Moshe brought their cause before Yahuwah. And Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said the following, the daughters of Zelophehad speak rightly. Surely you shall give them a possession and inheritance among their father's brethren, and you shall cause the inheritance of their father to pass to them. So they're going to get some land, and you shall speak to the Bnei Israel and say the following. Not only are they going to get some land, there's going to be a precedent set here, and essentially a rule that will enable us to see how situations like this will be handled in the future. If a man dies and he has no son, then you shall cause his inheritance to pass unto his daughter. Okay, that makes sense. If he doesn't have a daughter, then, in other words, if he doesn't have a son or a daughter, he has no offspring, then you shall give his inheritance unto his brethren. If he doesn't have any brothers, then you shall give his inheritance unto his father's brethren. Father's brethren. Okay, so basically his cousins. Let's see. Well, or if he has multiple wives, then it might be one of the brothers of the other wife. But you'd still, anyway. If his father doesn't have any brothers, then you give his inheritance to his kinsman that is nearest to him, next of kin in his family, and he shall possess it. And it shall be unto the Bnei Israel a statute of judgment, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. Then Yahuwah said to Moshe, get yourself up into this mountain of Abarim, and behold the land. Take a look. Spy out the land, or well, look at it from above, which I have given unto the Bnei Israel. And when you have seen it, you too shall be gathered unto your people, just as Aaron your brother was gathered, because you rebelled against my commandment there in the wilderness of Zin, in the strife of the congregation, to sanctify me at the waters before their eyes. In other words, he didn't do what he was supposed to do, and he knows it. These are the waters of Meribah Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. Moshe then spoke to Yahuwah, and he said, let Yahuwah, Elohim of the spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation, who may go out before them, and who may come in before them, who may lead them out, and who may bring them in, that the congregation of Yahuwah is not, or does not become, as a sheep who have no shepherd. Yahuwah then said to Moshe, all right, take Joshua, son of Nun, a man in whom is, and this is interesting, already, in other words, he already has the Ruach, and we've seen that before. That was said back when we had that first democratic vote in Scripture. Essentially was on the right side of. So, he has spirit already. Lay your hand upon him. Set him before Eleazar the Cohen, before all the congregation, and give him a charge. In other words, lay his duty upon him in their sight. You shall put of your honor upon him. So, this is part of the responsibility of the leader to pass the mantle, if you will. And all the congregation of Israel may hearken. They're to see, hear, and obey and understand who the new leader is. He's going to be the torch is passed, the anointing will happen before the congregation. He shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before Yahuwah. At his word they shall go out, and at his word they shall come in, both he and all the Bnei Israel with him, even Kol Ha'idah, all of the congregation. So Moshe did as Yahuwah commanded. He took Joshua, set him before Eleazar the priest and all of the congregation, laid hands on him, gave him a charge, as Yahuwah spoke by the hand of Moshe. And then we approach the finale here of the a Torah portion for this week with what looks like a another summary, as if the creator of the universe must think this is important. Isn't it funny? And I always emphasize it this way simply because it seems to me we hear this so often from the whore church, and all the people say, oh, you don't keep the Jewish feasts. That's all Old Testament stuff. We don't do that anymore. Well, it's obvious. That's part of the reason why the blessing of this land is so wonderful, and why things are going so well, and why families are so strong, and why our enemies are so weak, and why we're not being invaded, and why we're not deserving of curses, because we keep the feasts that he says to keep forever throughout your generations and all your dwelling places. Well, here's one more example. This is not the first time we have seen this. It's not going to be the last. Give the command to the B'nai Israel and say to them the following. My food, which is presented unto me for offerings made by fire, sweet savor unto me, you shall observe to offer in its due season. This you shall say. Here's the offering made by fire, which you shall bring to you, to Yahuwah. He lambs of the first year without blemish. Two daily, day by day, continual burnt offering. So this is what's called the evening lamb and the morning lamb. The morning lamb in the morning, the other lamb at dusk. And a tenth part of an ephah of fine flour for a meal offering, and mingled with a fourth part of a hin of beaten oil. This is continual, he says. It was offered in Mount Sinai for a sweet savor, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. The drink offering that goes with it will be a fourth part of a hin for one lamb. In a holy place, you pour out the drink offering of strong drink unto Yahuwah. The other lamb you present at dusk as a meal offering of the morning, and that's what you'll do at the evening time. And it's an offering made by fire, sweet savor unto Yahuwah. On the Sabbath day. So on the Sabbath day, guess what? He didn't change that either. Seventh day of the week, last day of the week, you bring two he lambs of the first year without blemish, two tenths part of an ephah, fine flour, mingled with oil, and the drink offering that goes with them. This is the olah, the burnt offering of every Sabbath. Now, it notes, that is in addition to the daily offerings that still continue to happen, besides the continual burnt offering and the drink offerings. Then, in your new moons, new moon, when the new moon is sighted, is how I read that nowadays, and it just says in your new moons. It's interesting. There's, of course, no shortage of argument about when precisely that is. Did they calculate it, or did they wait for two witnesses? Huh. Well, I read that, and I think he says, let everything be confirmed in the mouth of two or three witnesses. That seems to apply. Anyway, you shall bring on these new moon times a burnt offering unto Yahuwah, two young bulls, one ram, seven he-lambs of the first year without blemish, three-tenths part of an ephah of fine flour mingled with oil for each bull, two-tenths of fine flour mingled with oil for one ram, and a several-tenths part of fine flour mixed with oil for a meal offering for every lamb. Burnt offering of a sweet savor made by fire unto Yahuwah. The drink offerings, half a hin of wine for the bull, a third for a ram, a fourth for a lamb. This is the burnt offering for every new moon throughout the months of the year. Now, one he-goat for a chatat, a sin offering, is made unto Yahuwah. It is offered in addition to the continual burnt offering and the drink offering. As in the first month, on the 14th day of the month. Oh, well, wait a second. Now, here comes a bit more. So, we've already talked about offerings that are to be made daily and weekly and monthly. Now, we're going to get the recollection and the reminder of the rest of the appointed times of Yah. First month, 14th day of the month, is the Passover of Yod-Heh Vav-Heh, Pesach Le-Yahuwah. And on the 15th day of this month, there's a feast. 7 days, you do eat unleavened bread. First day is a holy convocation, no manner of servile work. You present that offering made by fire, a burnt offering unto Yahuwah. Two young bullocks, one ram, seven he-lambs of the first year, they shall be unto you without blemish. Their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, three-tenths part of an you shall offer for the bull, two-tenths for the ram, and a several-tenth part shall you offer for every lamb of the seven. One he-goat for a sin offering to make atonement. You shall offer these in addition to, this is going to be the case continuously, in addition to the burnt offering in the morning, which is for a continual burnt offering. And you do this, it says, for 7 days daily. The food of the offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, it is to be offered beside the regular continual burnt offering and the drink offering. And on the seventh day, you have a holy convocation. You shall do no manner of servile work. So one more time, we're having a repetition of the idea of the Sabbath, the week, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. First day and the last day are essentially what they're called a high Sabbath, a time of set apart, no servile work. Also, when you get to the counting of the Omer, the 50th day, the day of first fruits, when you bring, we're not getting there yet, but we're getting there. This is the day that we begin the count. The day of first fruits, when you bring a meal offering unto Yahuwah, you should have a holy convocation, no manner of servile work. But you present a burnt offering for a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, two young bulls, one ram, seven he lambs first year, their meal offering, fine flour, 3/10 for each bull, 2/10 for the ram, and a several tenth for every lamb of the seven, and one he goat to make atonement. And this again is in addition to the continual burnt offering, the meal offerings. They shall be unto you without blemish, along with their drink offerings. So we've had the summary of the spring feast ending with the time of the first fruits, and then it says on the seventh month, first day of the month, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no manner of servile work. It is the day of blowing of the shofar for you. So this is called the day of the shofar or Yom Teruah, the day of and Teruah is actually the sound that is blown on the shofar. But it is on the first day of the month. So this is unique. This, of course, is the singular of the Moedim that happens on the new moon. You shall prepare a burnt offering for a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, one young bull, one ram, seven he lambs first year without blemish, their meal offering, fine flour, 3/10 part for the bull, 2/10 for the ram, 1/10 for every lamb of the seven, and one he goat for a chatat to make atonement for you. The burnt offering is in addition to the one that's already going to be there on the new moon, right? So this is a new moon. You'd normally make that offering. You do that. And the meal offering thereof, continual offerings, the daily offerings, the drink offerings. This is all part of the process of an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. Okay, so that's part, the first of the fall feasts, if you will. On the 10th day of this month, we know what that is. This is the day that's called Yom Kippur. On the 10th day of this month, you shall have a holy convocation. And it says here, this is an interesting way to put it, you shall afflict your souls. You shall literally be, the word here is anah. Afflicted, occupied, oppressed, humbled, bowed down. You know, the rabbinic understanding, and I don't necessarily disagree with this, I just want to point out that it's actually a broader term than just a fast. So for those that say, yeah, it means a fast, I'm okay with that. I have no problem with people deciding to fast. But I do think it's interesting to note that this word is a little bit broader. It says, be afflicted, oppressed, humbled, bowed down. Oh, and of course, there's an absolute prohibition against any kind of work. It doesn't say no servile work. There's no qualifier. It says no manner of work, period. But you shall present a burnt offering unto Yahuwah for a sweet savor. One young bull, one ram, seven he lambs of the first year without blemish, their meal offering, fine flour with oil, 3/10 for the bull, 2/10 for the ram, and a several tenth part for every lamb among the seven. One he goat for a chatat, besides the regular sin offering for atonement, and the continual burnt offering, the meal offerings, and the drink offerings. So again, this also is an add-on. On the, in other words, it's not. You always do the daily offerings of the morning lamb and the evening lamb and the other things that are associated with the offerings that are regular and repeated. On the 15th day of the month, so we've had the 1st, the 10th, now the 15th day of the month, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall again do no manner of servile work and keep a feast unto Yahuwah for 7 days. So another of a feast of 7 days. First day is going to be a holy convocation, no servile work. Last day likewise. And what's going to be different here? We're going to get the presentation of the offerings that are going to be made day by day. And I always point this out too. Note, we cannot make these offerings anymore. Don't have a place to make them. Doesn't mean that it's not interesting that we don't think about them and try to understand what the implications are. So you present a burnt offering, an offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. All right, now this one's a little bit different, and it's kind of interesting. As an engineer, I go, hey, there's a pattern here. Let's see if we can't see what it is. Maybe write the equation. Scripture, however, just gives it to us in complete detail. It says this, the offering is 13 young bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he lambs of the first year. They shall be without blemish. Their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 for every bull, 2/10 for each ram of the 2 rams. And, of course, several tenths part for every lamb of the 14 lambs. One he-goat for a chatat, besides the regular continual burnt offering, the meal offering, and the drink offering. On the second day, so let's see here, second day, you present 12 young bulls, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs of the first year without blemish. Now, it was 13, right? So that's one less of the bullocks. Their meal offering, their drink offerings to the bull, the rams, in accord with a number after the ordinance. One he-goat for a chatat, besides the continual burnt offering, meal offerings, and the drink offerings. Third day, 11 bulls, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs, and their meal offerings, their drinks, as has been the case. One he-goat for a continual, for a chatat, besides the other continual offerings. On the fourth day, 10 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs of the first year without blemish. Their meal offerings, their drink offerings for the bulls, the rams, the lambs, after the number, after their ordinance, and, of course, the he-goat for a chatat, besides the continual meal offering, the drink offerings. On the fifth day, 9 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs, and the regular offerings that we continue to see, along with the he-goat for a continual chatat, a burnt offering, and the meal offerings and the drink offerings. Sixth day, 8 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs of the first year. Are we starting to see the pattern? On the seventh day, it says 7 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs of the first year without blemish. So, at this point, will suggest there is a pattern, and we'll see the pattern play out through the rest of the scriptures. Always good to make sure, if you think you see a pattern, to follow it through and say, yeah, is it consistent? And it is in this case. If you add up the day of the feast and the number of bulls, it adds up to 2 times 7, 14. And if you add up the number of he-lambs, it's always 14. Okay, so the number of he-lambs stays 14. The number of bulls plus the days adds up to 14. So essentially, as we go through the days, the number of bulls decreases one by one. Their meal offering, their drink offerings for the bulls and lambs, according to their number after the ordinance. And, of course, the he-goat for a chatat. And the meal offerings and drink offerings go along with all that. Eighth day, you have a solemn assembly. And you shall do no manner of servile work. So we've now gone through a whole week. We get to the eighth day. The eighth day is also what is sometimes called a high Sabbath. And we're not going to do any servile work, but we are going to present the offerings, a burnt offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, one bull, one ram, 7 he-lambs of the first year without blemish. Their meal offering, their drink offerings for the bullock, the ram, the lambs, shall be according to their number after the ordinance. One he-goat for a continual, for a sin offering, besides the continual burnt offering, the meal offering, the drink offerings. So we've gone through the whole week. And we present, in addition to the things that on the eighth day we've already essentially completed, the final offering for this particular day. And, of course, this is kind of the culmination, if you will. I think that's why there are so many animals that are offered up. Again, I don't want to presume that I understand the reasoning, but I do understand that one of the things that is a continual metaphor throughout Scripture is the metaphor of this time, of this great feast. We know it as Sukkot, of course. Feast of Booths, Tents, mangers in the Old English parlance in some cases, because that's what was happening at the time when Yeshua was born. And, of course, it is also associated with the wedding feast, prophetically, and a number of places in Scripture. It's seen as a wedding feast. So you can kind of see the joyfulness of this, and as a friend of mine likes to say, a huge week-long barbecue as well. These, it says, this is the final verse almost of the chapter. It's the final verse that has to do with something that is specific to what's going on here. These you shall offer unto Yahuwah in your appointed seasons. This is in addition to your vows, your free will offerings, and your burnt offerings. And all of these, in other words, continue, whether or not they're your burnt offerings, the olah, your meal offerings, or your drink offerings, or your shalamim, your peace offerings. And the final verse then in the portion is actually the first verse in most English Bibles of Numbers chapter 30, where it says, Moshe told the B'nai Israel according to all that Yahuwah had commanded Moshe. So it's not like we didn't know that. It's not like he needs to say it, but he does say it. So we know it's important, and the key here is to understand this is, in fact, what Yahuwah commanded Moshe.